Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Wow, that's what I got for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready? I hope you are. Guy, if you have a lot of caffeine, if not, grab a cup of coffee, because here we go. We have a very interesting show lined up for you, and Beth has outdone herself today, and the guest, Andrew Zatlin?
That is correct. The way it sounds, the way it's written.
There he is. Andrew Zatlin is our guest today. He is the Moneyball economist, editor of the Moneyball Economics and the website moneyballeconomics.com. This is really interesting and different, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm very excited to have Andrew on. Here's why. Andrew runs a big data firm called Moneyball Economics, and he began his career trained as an economist focusing on consumer trends as a research fellow. And he's got this broad background, but he's got a really interesting take on this. So let me fill out the resume and we'll get into it. But don't turn the channel because this is fascinating stuff. All right. So he got his MBA from Berkeley. He went on to Silicon Valley. Of course, was there right at the ground floor of the digital revolution. Probably played a role in inventing the internet. He was probably did that as well. Timing couldn't have been better. 20-year veteran of semiconductor and networking world. He's participated in this emergence of this whole new global economy, and he's just really tuned into this digital world and the changing global supply chain. Now, he's gone on to be involved with a lot of forecasting and projections and really getting a sense for what drives some of these changes. And of course, he's tuned into, as Moneyball Economics would imply, what's happening with our economics and how that relates to Wall Street and the markets, and are we in a bull? Will it last? Are we in a bear? What's going on? And so this is a really interesting insight into another world, ladies and gentlemen, of looking at this from a completely different perspective. So there you are, Andrew. That's your proper introduction. Anytime you want to take me with you to introduce you, just let me know.
Well, I feel like I can go home. I feel like
you're done.
Okay. That's it. Thanks a lot, folks.
You're welcome. Well, listen, don't disappoint. What is Moneyball all about?
Well, if you've ever seen the movie Moneyball, Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, obviously when we talk Moneyball, we want to keep in mind this is radio, but I look like Brad Pitt, ladies and gentlemen. Definitely not like Jonah
I've seen
Hill.
The pictures on LinkedIn. You are one handsome devil.
Heck of a handsome man in my own mind. It ultimately comes down to one thing. There's a tendency to get locked into certain perceptions of the world. And what happened with Moneyball, which is a true story about the Oakland A's, was it took an outsider's fresh perspective, a fresh pair of eyes to say, hey, you know what? There's a lot of good data out there that we could mine to better understand how the game of baseball is truly being played and how it's truly being won. Now, for example, what this statistic started to show is, in the old days of Babe Ruth, a pitcher could throw maybe 100 pitches in a game. But you fast forward and you've got bulkier players in the 80s and 90s. You've got steroids, and all of a sudden the pitchers are throwing 140 pitches, and pitchers can't throw that many pitches. So the whole game of baseball shifted to how do you wear down the pitcher? So all of a sudden the game is different. The way you're going to measure success and the way you're going to play it is different. So you need new metrics. You need a fresh pair of eyes to come in and say, the way these guys were playing and managing the game isn't the way the game's being actually played and won. So how do you win? And what was interesting about it was this was an individual coming in who never played the game. That's a little bit different from me in some respects, and I certainly can't claim to be as powerful as this guy is in terms of his perspectives and the metrics he brought to the table. But ultimately, I'm coming in from a Main Street world of experience where I've actually... I know how companies operate. I've played a role in creating CEO executive dashboards. You know, what are the five things that every morning this executive is going to wake up and look at to make a decision that day, to make a decision that impacts hiring, capital spending, you know, the fundamental gasoline that drives the economic engine. I know what's really going on. And what was interesting is when we had the Great Recession and I lost a fortune, I lost a fortune because I was listening to the Wall Street pros telling me that everything's great, here's the information, you know, check it out. And I sat there and I said, no, first of all, I've lost a lot of money listening to you guys, so something's wrong, but there's also a basic common sense. I've got my feet on Main Street, I'm sitting here, and I know that this is what you're telling me yes, the data point says that, but the data point is wrong. It's just not tied to reality. And then what I did is I started harnessing my experience with big data, harnessing my economics background, and saying, you know what? Let me dive into the mechanics of how these, you know, how do they come up with payroll data? How did they come up with some of these major economic benchmarks that move the market? And I found that these are data points that were made sometimes 70 or 80 years ago and are no longer relevant.
Mm.
I live in Silicon Valley, and I got to tell you, this is the 21st century is a digital economy. But it's not just that. It's functioning. It's structurally different from the economy of the 20th century. What we buy, where we buy, how we buy, everything is different, but the economic models that are being used by the folks who are in charge of our fiscal policy, they got their PhDs before the internet even existed. They can't comprehend what's going on in this economy. So when you have these great thinkers going, gee, why don't we have inflation? This doesn't make sense.
So it's not that they're dumb, they're just out of touch.
They're out of touch.
Yeah.
And so that's my advantage, is I come in and I can say, look, I can explain all of this. I can use all the information that they have. And when that information is incorrect or obsolete, I've made it my mission to go out and find the right information. You know, I know what CEOs are looking at. I know the information that they're drawing on. And I make it my mission to go out and find information that's going to be a proxy for that, that might get me a little bit earlier in the food chain, so I can give someone a little bit more advanced notice and say, hey, you know, here you go. And it's worked. You know, I'm one of the top forecasters for payrolls for retail. And so what I'm doing is I'm going back to Wall Street and saying, hey, you guys may be the pros, but I can beat you at your game in terms of, you know, economic forecasting. And that comes from both understanding how the economy is really functioning and using better data.
Okay, so it's getting better.
Way.
Yeah, it's getting better data, and it's getting it from not necessarily the traditional sources, which is really fascinating to me, Andrew. That you look at not necessarily financial data. You look at things that are beyond what Wall Street normally looks at, and then this can give you this more advanced warning system, if you will, especially if it's pointing toward things not being good or softening up in the short term. This is something to be very tuned into.
Yeah, I think we all, in our day-to-day world experiences, we're encountering economic information. Whether or not we see it as economic information is a different story. And that's where I come in, is I come in and I say, you know what, that is economics at play. That is telling us if consumers are out there and spending. That tells us if businesses are hiring or not. And, you know, there's a commonsensical approach to this that I think a lot of us have, but we just don't know how to take that information and sort of quantify and calibrate it. And you know, I have the advantage, actually, of having had to work for a living, you know, not going straight from MBA school to Wall Street, so I understand how companies really and truly operate, you know, the lag between information that's coming in and when someone really makes the decision to hire or start firing, you know, and how that lag. It's an interesting adventure, and it's been... I think a lot of people look at information and there's a lot of noise. I think the internet brought out a lot of noise. You know, there's so much information now that finding the signal, finding the information that's truly relevant, and has the statistical robustness. Maybe I could give an example of the difference between some of the information I harness and some of the information that folks read in the paper that is this supposedly important and vital and comprehensive set of statistics that tells us what's really going on.
Well, before you dig into that, Andrew, let's do this. Let me just get, I want to get to that. Let's kind of back up, and this may be what you're getting at, but let's clarify.
Sure.
The role of big data in this approach that you take, is again, kind of finding another way to have this indicator, for lack of a better word, an indicator that will tie to what we expect to see or what we actually will see from these companies and from Wall Street? Is that where the big data role plays in?
Well, the big data role is two things. One is there's a lot of data, so you have to pull that in and crunch through it at a fast clip. So every week, for example, I'm pulling in almost 1 million pieces of data on hiring, just hiring alone. You know, everything from where it's happening, what type of jobs are being hired for, the rate, just tons of information out there. You have to have a lot of computing power to crank through that. And then it's a question of taking that whole world of data and matching it to a corresponding set of information.
Okay.
And saying, okay, there is a relationship here. You can have spurious relationships, and you have to basically make sure that passing the sniff test.
Okay. Let's grab a break. We'll come back with Andrew. Andrew Zatlin's our guest, the Moneyball Economist, and the website moneyballeconomics.com. You can sign up for a newsletter there on the website. I've already done it myself. Looking forward to getting more information and being in the know, if you will, with the Moneyball Economist. And we're going to grab a break, come back. I want to talk to Andrew about some of these metrics and some of these things that he looks at. And one of them is the Vice Index. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Just ask a stockbroker or insurance agent how you should invest your money, and what do you think they would say? Unfortunately, if an advisor is limited in what he can offer, that advisor is often understandably biased. You need to ask questions like what products and services they can and cannot offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This PSA has been brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew Zatlin on the other end of the line with me, and we're talking about Moneyball Economics. That's the website, and there's lots there. You got to go take a look. And Andrew, let's dive in or dig deeper, if you will, into some of this this approach that is very different than anything I've ever heard or seen. I'll be quite candid with you. And you, one of the things that you look at is what's called the Vice Index. So tell us a little bit about that, and maybe that'll kind of give us a little bit of a sense for what you're looking at and how this data is used to tie to some of the other indicators and what we can do with this information.
Okay, first of all, I want to emphasize I look at the data, right?
Right.
As we talked about vices,
right.
I'm only looking.
That's right. You are just an observer.
I am an observer. Thank you. Now, remember, we're coming from the standpoint of data-driven decision-making, right? Always, if the data says this is what's going on, then that's what the data says is going on. You have to make sure that we are not trying to cherry-pick or, you know, with an agenda, force a story. What economists know, everybody knows this, you don't have to be an economist. When times are good, you're going to go out and spend. When it's time for belt tightening, you're going to pull back. And the first place, the canary in the coal mine, as it is, for that spending change is what we call luxury goods. You might hear the term discretionary spending
and all
the fun stuff. Now, basically, what it means is after I've taken care of the rent and the insurance and all these other things, I've got money left over. I've got cash in my pocket. And there's even an expectation that I'll have cash in my pocket tomorrow. So there's a today, tomorrow story element here. But it comes down to the fact of I'm going to always spend a little bit of this on wants and a little bit of this on my needs. Well, my wants, you know, there's a variety of them. It could be going out for Starbucks coffee. And everyone has a different definition of luxury good. Traditionally, I think it was J.P. Morgan, they even had an index where they tracked Sotheby's sales, they tracked Tiffany sales. And the problem is when you track yacht sales, that's not really telling you much about the 99%, you know,
right,
the rest of the poor economy, right?
Right.
And that's been the problem is if you know that luxury spending is a really fantastic leading indicator of all other consumer spending, and hey, 70-something percent of our economy is consumer-driven, so if you can focus on consumer spending, you pretty much know what the economy is going to be doing. Well, the problem is the holy grail, as it is how do you track that in a quantitative way if you know, you can't really track, you know, did somebody buy those Nike shoes because that for them, you know, $200 pair of shoes is a luxury spend and they feel really good. What I found is that vice spending, and you know, I don't want to put an ethical moral label on it. Let's call vice spending the four things that I track: gambling, alcohol consumption, narcotics, and prostitution. And believe it or not, the reason that those are in my index is because, A, I can track them. I can track them going back 20 years.
Hmm.
So we've got the quantitative element. Remember, it's got to be data-driven.
Right.
Very robust.
Right.
A lot of data there that I can track that is consistent and able to get to. It's also something that cuts across all the socioeconomic demographics. Remember, Sotheby's, Tiffany's, you know, that's marginal. Everybody out there at some point in time, I can't say everybody, but you know, there's sufficient enough people who are drinking alcohol or gambling. Vegas sees a few million people every month come in the door. There are, and some estimates say, almost 70 million people who smoke marijuana regularly in the U.S. If you can track these numbers, you're really getting a large slice of what the general population is spending on their, when we talk about luxury goods. So I set out to do that. I've done it. And what's interesting is, along the way, I found something even better about tracking vices, and that's this cash-based. Most spending, you put on your credit card.
Right.
If you want to go to a movie or dinner or whatever, put it on the credit card.
Okay.
I don't know many drug dealers who take credit cards.
No, not yet.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a big ticket. Now, when you start thinking about this, let's say that the, I'll use the Bay Area where I live. The median price for an escort is $300 an hour. Let's think about that. After taxes. Before taxes, that's, let's say, I don't know, $450. Believe it or not, when the median income is around $50,000, $450 is a day or two of wages that someone's willing to spend on an hour with an escort. So it's a big ticket item in terms of nominal dollars.
Right.
$200 in cash.
Right.
And it's significant in terms of where else could they put that money. That's a day or two of work that someone's willing to put over here. They have to feel that that cash is in their pocket and it's going to be there and it's easily spent. So it's a very interesting thing. When you talk about a cash-based economy, not only does it talk to you about, you know, the desire and ability of the consumer to spend, but turned around, the vendors, the people who are providing these services or products, they don't have lines of credit typically. If people aren't spending money, for example, in 2013 when the sequester hit, you remember, I think it was October, November time frame, the prostitutes in Washington, D.C. area were suddenly without business.
Yeah.
And you could track the degree to which they were frantically trying to work the phones to drum up business. It was really interesting. Because a cash-based economy in the consumer world very quickly responds to near-term economic shift. I didn't know this setting out, but when you start to look at the data, you can really see how sensitive this type of spending is. And so what I've done is I've taken this and I've created what I call the Vice Index. And what we do is use it to predict retail, and I am one of the best retail forecasters out there. And I'm not tooting my horn, it's just sort of to create the legitimacy of the data to show how it really is powerful. I've gone out and said, let me use it as the backbone for forecasting where the retail trends are. Not this month, but I can do it month in advance, and I'm extremely accurate. I beat most folks in the most recent retail, for example. What it means is we can get our finger on the pulse of consumer spending, and I do it through vices. It's a really accurate gauge of where the economy is going. And what's interesting is, if I may, compare this to what we frequently see, the consumer sentiment. Oftentimes every month you'll hear, consumer sentiment is this.
Right, right.
Let me talk about the mechanics. You know, we talked about big data and Moneyball. Did you know that the way they create that consumer sentiment figure is they call 400 people?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, 400 people. I'm tracking millions of transactions. They think that they can track the economy by talking to 400 people. That's how obsolete and out of touch most of today's economic benchmarks have become.
Well, that puts us in a pretty blind spot, or at least a pretty opaque situation, to not be able to really get a broader base and clearer picture. And that's why this is so revolutionary and so interesting to me, because it just kind of cuts through. And I want to grab another quick break, Andrew. When we come back, I want to get your, you know, give us some insight with your, what your Vice Index has been telling you, because I know that there's been a little bit of a trend that isn't necessarily good. So let's do that. Andrew Zatlin, ladies and gentlemen, the Moneyball Economist, editor of Moneyball Economics. MoneyballEconomics.com is a website. Right back after this break.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary, a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. A fiduciary also means an advisor should recommend products and services he believes will best serve his client's needs, not what an insurance company or investment company tells him he has to sell. Next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary? Yes or no?" If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer's probably no. This public service announcement is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Yes, indeed. And we are back with Andrew Zatlin, now going to share with us more about the Moneyball Economics Vice Index and more information at moneyballeconomics.com. And we've got a trend, or what do we got going on with your Vice Index? I know you're tracking this on a monthly basis, Andrew. What
month
to month?
I track it religiously. Let's call it Hookernomics. That's my term for the segment of Vice Index which looks at escort, Hookernomics. Because it's really, it's much more, I believe, revealing about consumer
trends. No pun intended.
I did a survey back over the holidays of escorts. We call them escorts. And first of all, I want to make sure your audience understands, when we talk about escorts, a lot of them are college educated. A lot of them, you know, we really got to make sure that we have the right perspective here of who we're talking to. These are not what you might expect, you know, people on the street. These are very intelligent, informed women. In order for them to charge $1,000 an hour to spend time with a business executive, for example, there's got to be some communication. There's got to be the ability to keep up with very smart, powerful men. Okay, so I really want to be very clear here. And that matters because when we do a survey, I took basically every month, the Federal Reserve does a survey at the regional level of businesses. They'll reach out to about 100, 150 local businesses and say, how are things? How are things in your business? Are you going to be raising prices? Are costs going up or down? What do you feel is happening with your customers and so on and so forth? I did the same thing, except the businesses I talked to were escorts. So equally valid, same almost 100 at the regional level, same, in other words, statistically speaking, the same grouping. The feedback was really interesting and very insightful. And that's why I emphasize these are college-educated women, because their insights really are coming from a strong base of a good perspective. Not that you have to have that to be, you know, not that being college-educated makes you that way. I'm just saying, you know, I oftentimes find people smirking or have the wrong impression of escorts. So in any case, the feedback that came said that we are not going to see inflation. Now, go back in time to December, January timeframe, and everybody who was a professional economist and forecaster, and everyone out there was saying, oh, inflation's coming, and there's
right.
this reason and that reason, right?
Right.
So I asked the basic questions. Where do you see your costs today and in 6 months? And the answer was, we don't see costs going up.
Hmm.
Where do you see your prices going? We're not going to be raising prices because we're not finding the margin squeezed from higher costs. Interesting. Are your consumers, are your customers coming to you and spending more, less? You know, that can creep in many different ways, but that fundamentally is the question. Is there more demand or less demand? And how is that in 6 months? And the feedback here was very interesting because it then broke into two ways. In general, the feedback was steady as you go, no acceleration demand, no deceleration. But at the high end, there seems to be a lot of complaining that, you know, people were starting to get a little cheap.
Hmm.
Clients weren't giving as many gifts. In other words, the high end was suddenly not as easy for money. But all in all, what I was hearing was there's no inflation. And so I released that survey in early January. I said, look, here are people who depend on somebody else's excess money. And they're saying that those folks are spending, but there's no rumors of big bonuses or, you know, wage hikes. They're spending exactly what they were spending. There's no whisper about spending less or more. It's a steady-as-you-go environment with low inflation.
Hmm.
Now, this is interesting because I had actually, not too long before I did this survey, I had gone to the Wall Street Journal and I had gone to Fox Business, which you guys like to participate. is anecdote. And the response I got back from the Wall Street Journal was what you would expect from a conservative paper. Wall Street Journal demurred. Fox said, hey, man, it was interesting because ultimately neither one wanted to pursue it because, again, the topic is somewhat toxic,
yeah.
even though it's very revealing. But what was interesting is I wanted to take these same questions and go to folks like Janet Yellen, go to folks like Larry Summers, Krugman, all of these guys who talk about, they know the economy. And I want to say, okay, fine, here's the same questions I'm asking. Let's come back 3-6 months down the road and see who's more accurate,
mm-hmm.
a prostitute or you. It turns out the prostitutes are much more, they've got a better finger on the pulse of the economy than these.
I would say so.
Gurus,
yeah. And the trend.
As you can tell, I'm a little bit, I have to qualify a lot of what I say around the topic because, again, I have been hit hard around the head for even daring to talk about the validity of the data.
Right.
So sometimes I have to sort of be a little bit, you know, I don't want to go into the moral implications. I just simply want to say this is what people are spending money on. They're spending a lot of it.
You're measuring data.
It's a measure of data. It's a valid measure of data, too. And apparently it's very useful. I mean, so I could sit there and say to my clients, there's no inflation. There's no chance of inflation. And even more interesting, some of the comments I got back, which I think are very relevant for the next couple of months, are the only reason we are steady as we go, the only reason consumer demand is as high as it is today, because of that oil gas pump dividend.
Mm. Well, that's pretty revealing in and of itself. Well, Andrew, I tell you what, we're out of time. We're going to have to send them to your website, moneyballeconomics.com. More great information. You can subscribe to the newsletter. Andrew Zatlin's been our guest. Listen, Andrew, lots more to talk about. We have it back for another program.
Thank you very much. Great. Thank you again for having me on.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.